You're listening to Good Sentences, the podcast that's guaranteed to tickle your literary ear holes and make you wish you'd listened to dear old mom when she said to put down those lawn darts and learn how to read. And now, here are your hosts, neither of whom listened to dear old mom. This is Craig A. Hart and S.J. Varengo.
So, Scott, I'm assuming you've heard of this relatively new invention called the television.
I have seen pictures of them, poorly drawn. No, the television is a very wonderful tool.
Now we are faced with something I don't understand at all, which is streaming. And we have a billion different services now offering various streaming. Disney has recently reclaimed all of their material and now offering their own streaming service, which, of course, my kids want. Oh,
my daughter's going to be 27 in a week or two, and she has it.
Yeah, I mean, it just isn't one more expense. Like, they used to call it nickel and diming. I don't even think that applies anymore. When's the last time you spent a nickel or a dime on something?
Exactly. I saw a meme the other day that was made. I've seen a lot of them about people. They'll list, their streaming accounts, and it was it started out, it was my old cable bill, $150 a month, and then he starts listing Hulu, $11.99, Netflix, blah blah blah, and he gets on down to Live Asian Masseuse Girl, $1,540, and then the bottom line is, how am I saving any money?
Right, and that's the only one I can't cancel is the bad thing.
But I'm locked into a contract with them.
Right, it is getting crazy. There are a couple that I would be hard pressed to ever give up. One of which is Netflix. That's the one that's been around for a while. That's the one I've known the longest. Like back when they were still.
Remember when they used to mail you?
I was going to say, do they even do that anymore?
I don't think they do. No, I remember it went. That was all they did.
Right.
Then they started introducing the streaming so you could get a deal with streaming along with your rentals. And then they phased the rentals out. Yeah.
And the grand scheme hasn't been that long ago, but the technology has moved so quickly. And one of the stars on the Netflix platform is the show Longmire. I don't know if you've seen any of those episodes.
I am ashamed to admit I have not, but I can tell you who has. My son, Evan, since episode one, been a huge fan. Yeah, he's watched every single one.
It's a good show, and it's one of the reasons why is because it has, I don't know if you'd say unusual, but an atypical protagonist, hero.
In my mind, when I first got the concept of what he was all about, another character came to mind for me. It was a guy named Shelby.
That's ringing a bell.
Same premise as your character, Shelby Alexander.
Right.
No longer in his prime, but still can kick some booty when the need be.
The exciting part is that we on the show today, we actually have the creator of Longmire, Craig Johnson.
Oh,
and
cool.
Yeah, I know.
Then I'm not going to bother complimenting you anymore.
Right. Exactly,
I got a better Craig to move on to. This is awesome.
We Craigs are a dime a dozen. It's just, you've heard one, you've heard them all, really. And he actually talks about, in the interview that we'll be listening to, he talks about the character of Longmire and the creation of the character and how much joy and pleasure he gets out of creating characters and how important he feels characterization is to the writing process.
I've watched the interview already, and you did a fine job of it, by the way, considering you were speaking to a still photograph for the entire interview.
Yeah, I tried to get him on Skype for that. This was back during the Games and Writers Show days, and he's like, Skype doesn't work too well out here at the ranch. people say that in jest, back at the ranch. But when he says it, it's for real.
He's literally on a ranch Wyoming or something?
Think so, yeah.
Good point about his stressing character. I've noticed quite a few of the authors that I really enjoy, when you get to hear them talk about craft character development, the depth of character and consistency, especially if we're talking in terms of a series, or better still, evolution of that character over the life of the series. A lot of these really enjoyable authors stress that as one of their key points, and Craig was no exception.
The concept of character arc in writing, and in particular, in the standalone book, but in a series particularly, so people don't know what we're talking about when we're talking about the concept of character arc. It basically is a character starts at one place And by the end of the book or series or throughout the series, they evolve into something else and they end up at someplace else. The idea being, if you read, say, a book that has no character arc, you get to the point end and you wonder what the point was.
Yeah, it's just like you were looking through someone's living room window for right. 400 pages, you know, and you found the most boring guy in the entire planet, the Peapod.
Never changes, never does anything to better himself, or never has anything to tackle, no hardships to take on.
Except for maybe to, like, find the remote every now and then.
We're to have the time. It might be fun, like, to see how boring of a book we could write. I bet we could. I could write a pretty boring book. And people say I've already done that.
Some of the reviews that I've gotten, I've already mastered that. So I think I'm going to move in the other direction if possible. Thank right. you.
Yeah, don't try to drag me back. What is your plan here?
Another boring book.
Well, one thing that Craig Johnson does not write is boring books, and we're happy to have him here on Good Sentences. Johnson is the New York Times best-selling author of the Walt Longmire mystery series, which has garnered popular and critical acclaim, and is the basis for the hit Netflix drama titled simply Longmire. Craig Johnson, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Good to be here.
So when you began writing about Walt Longmire, did you intend it to be a series, or was that a concept that kind of came about after the first book was completed?
Yeah, no, it wasn't at all. Like, it was just supposed to be a standalone book, was what it was supposed to be. The first novel in the what became a series, like, that was called The Cold Dish. And I think, I don't know, I mean, you know, I guess, you know, it varies for a lot of authors, but I guess whenever I first started out, I was just stunned, you know, that if all I wanted was if I could get one book published, I thought that would be pretty amazing. So I just had my fingers crossed for that. So the idea of actually, you know, having a series of books or something was just, you know, otherworldly. So I just, you know, I just, you know, hoped and prayed that, like, maybe, you know, just maybe I could get this, you know, this one book, you know, published. And I guess, you know, there were some things that, you know, worked for that and worked against that. I mean, you know, the one of the dirty little secrets is that the first draft of The Cold Dish was actually about 650 pages long. It was kind of like War and Peace in County, where I think I made the mistake that I think a lot of beginning authors make, you know, where I thought, okay, if I can fool them into publishing this one book, then, you know, they are never going to publish another one. So I'm putting everything in this book. So I did, you know, and it was way, way too long and way too much, you know, and that actually taught me a good lesson, you know, for subsequent books, because I tend to write long. Like, I tend to, you know, have a little bit too much in the first draft, you know, but then what that makes you capable of being able to go back and, you know, and, you know, kind of chop and channeling everything and taking out all the stuff that really doesn't have any reason to be in there, or, you know, elaborating on the things that, you know, really do need to be in there. And that was, you know, kind of how it all started. But I think on the positive side, I really did my best to try and give a full-fledged world, you know, to that first book, you know, in an ensemble of characters and a definition of place that I think, you know, was very helpful in continuing on, you know, with those characters, because I had so many questions, you know, even as much as I had put in there, you know, the more you put in, the more questions, you know, there are. And so I was looking for, you know, opportunities to maybe tell some more stories, you know, about some of the other characters that are in that first book. And that kind of opened it up, you know, for the opportunity to be able to write a series. Like, and I have to give credit where credit's due, that it was Catherine Cord, the president of Penguin, who sat me down and said, you know, we really like these characters. We really think that they've got, you know, a life, and we think that, you know, people are going to want to know more about them and about the relationships and about the place. And we think this has the opportunity of being a really wonderful series. And that's when I, with the knowledge of not even having had, you know, one book published, started arguing with the president of Penguin USA. And saying, oh, I don't think that'll work. I don't think that's a really good idea. But I've got some other ideas I want to bounce off of you. And she said, why don't you go go back to your ranch and sit down and think about this, you know, because, you know, we think that, you know, we think it does and we think it will. Like, and so, you know, of course, you know, like an idiot, I came back and started thinking about it and I thought, okay, yeah, you know what? There are a lot of questions, especially about the characters. You know, about, you know, like Walt's relationship, you know, with Vic, you know, and his history with Henry, you know, and, you know, Lucian and all of these other characters, you know, the only way to find out about those things was to continue on and to do some more stories like that. And I think, you know, a lot of it comes down to character. You know, a lot of it does, no matter what the source of entertainment, you know, whether it be movies, whether it be TV shows, whether it be games, you know, what novels, whatever. You know, it's always going to come down to character. You know, whenever I'm doing writer's workshops, I'm always, you know, telling students that, you know, the big thing is character. You know, whenever the books got turned into a TV show, one of the things that happened was that these big agencies out in Los Angeles, periodically what they'll do is they'll send an agent, you know, to the literary agencies in New York, you know, to just kind of like, you know, throw a net out and see if they can find, you know, material that might work, you know, as a television show, you know, or as a movie or something along those lines. And it was interesting to me because the agent that came from CAA that, you know, that went into my literary agent's office and, you know, was looking for, you know, kind of, you know, netting out there to see if they could, you know, trolling and see if they could find some material. The thing she asked for was, she says, we're looking for material with really strong characters. That's what she said. She didn't say Western. She didn't say mystery. She didn't say, you know, anything other than we're looking for material with really, really strong characters. And I think that there's a lesson to be learned in that, you know, that, you know, because people are always wondering, you know, how do I get my book published? How do I get my TV show made? How do I get my movie done? You know, all of these things, you know, and it's always going to come back to the characters. It's, you know, if you're not interested, if you're not involved, if they don't draw you in, and, you know, literally, you know, make themselves, you know, a part of your life, you know, to where you actually care about them
right.
in some way, then I think, you know, you've got an uphill battle to try and get something done.
I think you're absolutely right about, you know, the character side of it, and you've done such a great job of creating those. So, but Longmire is a different kind of hero, certainly not like the six-pack abs, invincible guy that so often shows up in books as the hero. Why did you decide to take a different route when creating his character?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of times, you know, whenever you're doing any kind of creative, you know, capacity, I think the first thing you have to look at and see, you know, which direction everybody's running in, and then go the other direction,
right.
and try and do something different. And, you know, it's, you know, for me, it was pretty simple like that because it just made him, you know, more real, you know, than, you know, those comic book characters that you see. And, you know, I mean, you know, whenever I would like run into, you know, the investigators, you know, or detectives or anything like that, you know, they couldn't go spend 4 hours in the gym every day. That's just not, right. you know, their life did not allow for that. You know, they were out doing the job, you know? And so, for me, like that Walt became, you know, kind of a emblematic of that, you know, everyman kind of aspect where, you know, he's more like us is what he is. Like, I mean, I you know, don't know you physically, like, and so, you know, I can't speak for you. You may have those six pack abs. I don't know. Like,
No.
You know, and I don't know. I mean, I just, you know, find that to be, you know, kind of, you know, an untruth, you know, whenever I'm looking at those characters, you know, they're fine for like, you know, for comic books and that kind of thing like that. But, you know, for a real character, you know, for a real person, you know, I think you've got to delve a little bit deeper. And, you know, in Walt's, you know, what I tend to refer to as that sadder but wiser, you know, kind of character. You know, he's lived a life, like, and he's had things happen to him like that, and some of it good, some of it bad, you know, and but the big thing about him is that he still gets up in the morning and tries to do the job. He's got right. that tenacity that allows him, you know, to continue on, you know, when everybody else would give up. You know, he'll knock on one more door. He'll make one more phone call. He'll go through one more transcript, you know, of an interrogation or an interview. And, you know, and you know, if you're out there and you're doing bad things, he's the last guy that you want after you, because he's not going to give up. He's, you know, he does have that tenacity. There were two things I kind of gave him, you know, one was that tenacity and the other was a sense of humor, right, which I think is another aspect that's, you know, sometimes missing, you know, and a lot of the time in this type of material, like that anybody that's ever had a tough job knows that the way that you get through to the end of the day, you're going to do one of two things at the end of the day. You're either going to laugh or you're going to cry. And I know right, which one it is that I would rather do. Like, and so, you know, for me, it becomes really kind of essential to have that development of character to where they all have very distinctive voices, you know, where they all have very distinctive senses of humor. Mm-hmm. And I just think that it makes the characters, you know, infinitely more believable, and certainly makes them, you know, more fun to be around when they have a sense of humor. I mean, you know, when I'm doing writers' workshops, you know, and I'm working with young writers, you know, one of the big questions they'll always ask is, how do you get, you know, readers to empathize, you know, with your characters? How do you get them to, you know, to really, you know, connect, you know, with their characters? And I'm always like, well, who do you like hanging around with? You know, people that, you know, make you laugh. You know, give your characters a sense of humor. Let them realize the situations that they're in, or, you know, what it is that they're dealing with, you know, with a sense of humor. That's what we all do every day, you know, and it's kind of important. And inevitably, the next thing out of their mouth is, yeah, but what if I'm not funny? And then you're like, well, then you've got a problem. You're just trying to develop that sense of humor a little bit. I don't know. Like, yeah, but that's like trying to teach people how to be funny is like trying to teach them not to sweat. You know, right. Really, you know, kind of impossible. Like, but I think it's something you can work at, like a lot of things like that. I mean, you're very rarely are you going to go into any art, you know, any form of art, you know, and be, you know, absolutely secure in, you know, every facet of it. You know, you're going to have to work on the weaknesses. You know, I mean, you obviously, you know, try and utilize as much of your strengths as possible, but also realize that, you know, there's weaknesses you need to work at too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think all of us, just speaking specifically as writers, have our strengths and our weaknesses, and just learning how to minimize the weaknesses and capitalize on the strengths can make all the difference. But speaking of, you know, personalities, you know, your wife has been quoted as saying that Walt Longmire is who Craig Johnson would like to be in 10 years. It's just that he's off to an incredibly slow start. Are you making any progress on that front? Are you gaining on Longmire at all? What would she say?
You know, I've been writing Walt for, you know, 14 years now, and I like to think that I have, you know, some small increments of you know, of advancing myself as a better person. But, you know, I don't know, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe I don't know. Maybe I'm losing ground. I don't know. Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, you know, yeah, that definitely, you know, is one of those things. I mean, one of my favorite quotes, you know, on writing is the one from Wallace Stegner, you know, where he says the greatest piece of fiction ever written is the disclaimer at the beginning of every book that there's nobody in this book is based off anybody alive or dead. What a crock that is, you know. Right. And so, you know, I think, you know, whenever you're writing a, you know, a character in first person, you know, I mean, that's 300 pages of, you know, basically a stream of consciousness, you know, internal monologue, you know, because, you know, you basically, you know what Walt's thinking the whole time. And so a certain amount of yourself is going to have to leak, you know, into that character.
Sure.
To a certain extent, you know, and I think there are aspects, you know, certainly the sense of humor, I like to think, is something that we share. I think a sense of justice, I think, is another thing that we share. I'm a big believer in a level playing field, that everybody gets the same treatment, that everybody gets the same chance to do the right thing, you know. And those are all important to me. But then there are also aspects of Walt's character that are so completely alien to me. You know, the fact that he has, you know, led an entire life, you know, basically, you know, once he lost his deferment, you know, in California, USC, playing football, you know, in the 60s, you know, and was drafted, you know, and went into the military as a military police officer, like, and then came back to Wyoming, and the only job that was available was a deputy sheriff, and then graduating from that to being a sheriff. His entire life has been in law enforcement, you know, and so I think it's given him a really definitive, you know, kind of view of, you know, how it is to do his job, you know, whereas I've kind of been a jack of all trades and, you know, master of none, you know, where I've bounced around and done all these different things like that. And, I think that, you know, that gives him a very, you know, clear, you know, perspective on things. The other thing that's, you know, that's a major part of his character is he's had a lot of tragedies in his life, you know, mostly, you know, the biggest one, of course, being the loss of his wife. And I haven't had those kind of tragedies in my life, you know, and so I don't have that kind of deep-seated depression that I think, you know, is something that he battles against, you know, with that sense of humor, you know, with that camaraderie, you know, with the people that he works with, you know, and with Henry and all of his friends on the reservation. I think that he, you know, he combats that, you know, to a great extent, you know, almost on a daily basis. Like that, and I think that that's, you know, one of the key elements to a dramatic conflict, you know, within the character, you know, and not just, you know, plot driven, but, you know, actually, you know, within himself.
Speaking of the Netflix show, so the books obviously have been made into the long running show, highly popular, but how close is the show to the books, and what are some things that they've changed between the two mediums?
Well, I was very fortunate, you know, in the sense that I kind of went into it, you know, with my eyes open, realizing, like, that, you know, that this is a collaborative effort, you know, that it takes, you know, a village, you know, to kind of get this kind of thing off the ground. And I, you know, you hear and see, you know, like, all of these, you know, situations where, you know, these writers are unhappy, you know, with what it is that's been done, you know, with their work, and they would have preferred this, they would have preferred that. And my immediate response to that is, well, then you shouldn't have taken the check, shouldn't
yeah,
you?
Right.
You should have, you know, said no, you know, when they ask you to sign on the dotted line, rather than, you know, doing this like 11th hour bitching session, you know, where,
right,
you know, you're unhappy, you know, with what it is that was done. I mean, the biggest, you know, probable ability that you have as a writer, you know, in these, the strongest power that you have in these situations is before it gets done. You need to, you know, realize, you know, who these people are that you're working with, what it is that they've done. And so I was, you know, very fortunate in that, you know, what I got, you know, from Warner Brothers, you know, was, and CAA was, you know, more of a collective agreement like that, where it was a package deal where I got to meet the directors and the producers and the writers and everybody before, you know, I signed on the dotted line. And, yeah, they were marvelous people. Like, and they had a really incredible track record, you know, of all of these shows that they had done. And I thought, okay, this might just work. And like I said, you know, kind of going into it with my eyes open, realizing that there were probably going to be some changes made. Because what makes for, you know, a good book series, or what makes for a really good novel, might not work the best, you know, for a television series or for a movie. You know,
sure,
there are going to be changes, you know, that they're going to have to make. And like I said, it's a collaborative effort. So, you know, you've got, you know, the producers have their input, the directors have their input, the actors have their input, all the way down to, like, you know, the costuming people have input, and the set people have input, location people have input. Even, you know, when you're dealing with television, you know, the advertisers, you know, suddenly have input, you know, and so you kind of have to be open to the idea that things are probably going to change a little bit, but then you know, that doesn't make it always easy. I remember one of the first meetings that I had with the producers, they said, you know, well, we're thinking about making Walt and Henry about 10 years younger than they are in your books. And I had the immediate, you know, redneck cowboy, you know, author response, where I was like, well, now why are we doing that? And they said, well, because, you know, we'd really like the TV show to run for about 10 or 12 years, and we'd rather not have Walt on and Henry on walkers by the time we got through to the end. Like, and so, you know, I kind of had a hard time arguing with that.
Right.
And so, you know, I think, you know, you just have to realize that there are going to be changes. And I think we were extraordinarily fortunate, because, you know, one of the first things they said to me was also, look at that, hey, you know, the, you know, your books don't break down to a 42-minute teleplay very easily. And I said, thank God. If they did, you shouldn't be reading them. You know, so they could only fit so much of a book into a 42-minute teleplay. Like, and since we had a lot of pressure from the original network that had us, that they wanted beginnings, middles, and ends, you know, to all the episodes, which changed, you know, whenever we went over to Netflix, it was going to have an effect. And I think they did a pretty marvelous job, you know, really kind of like, you know, working with the limitations that they had and doing the things that they did. And then, of course, you know, then there's the casting like that, that they did, which was spectacular.
Yeah.
The casting people were actually the ones that, you know, do all of the HBO shows. And they went out on a search like that and, you know, did an absolutely magnificent job, you know, in finding Robert Taylor and Katie Sackhoff and Lou Diamond Phillips, A. Martinez, Adam Bartley, all of these, you know, really incredible actors that were just waiting in the wings that maybe had not had the opportunity to, you know, to really kind of like, you know, get their wings out there and stretch them, you know, in a, you know, in something that's maybe a more realistic kind of drama of, you know, the contemporary American West, and with a depth of character that, you know, that maybe they hadn't had a chance to work with before. And, you know, they really, you know, showed what it was that they could do. Once again, it goes back to character, you know, and, you know, we were extraordinarily fortunate to have some very, very talented people, you know, to do the show with.
Yeah, they are absolutely fantastic, and I think you were wise to go into it with your eyes open in that regard, because, you know, writing is such a solitary thing, and but there isn't a field much more collaborative than film. You know, that's not one of those things you can do by yourself.
No, not at all. Like, and it's, you know, and I, you know, because, like, you know, the writer's room, the, you know, the Longmire had a writer's room where they had this entire group of writers, you know, and the producers would be in there and the directors would be in there. And, like, all these people in the writer's room as they're hashing out, you know, these episodes, which they would send to me and I would give them feedback. Hmm. But they always sounded like hell to me. Like, you know, because there you are in a room full of people arguing for your ideas. And I don't do that very well. I don't work and play well with others. Yeah. You know? When it's my characters in my world, you know, I want it my way, like, you know, which is why I live, you know, in a little ranch and you cross Wyoming, population 25, near the Wyoming-Montana border, like, and you know, that's, you know, that's what I like, that's what I love, like, that's my life. But I don't know if I completely answered your previous question, which is, you know, the characters are very similar, you know, to the books, like at the world that they live in is very similar. They used bits and pieces, you know, from the books, but, and then there were actually episodes that used, you know, large plot lines from the books. But most certainly, like, at, they kind of went on some different directions, you know, and they were pretty smart about it, because one of the things that they said to me was, is that, you know, we're you know, we don't want to slavishly reproduce the books, you know, because we don't want to ruin the books for all the people that are going to see the TV show. And then again, we also don't want to ruin the, you know, the TV show for people, all the millions of people that have read the books.
Right.
And so I'm always consistently amazed, like, you know, every once in a while I'll meet somebody and they'll say, oh, well, I would read your books, but I've already seen the television show, so I guess I don't have. And I'm like, oh, no, you can jump in and, you know, and read the books. It won't hurt you one bit. Like, you're in for a whole other universe, in all actuality, and it doesn't hurt to approach one from the other.
Right. Awesome. Well, what are you working on right now? Something that we can look forward to from you?
Well, let's see. I've got Land of Wolves, like that, which is from a Basque proverb that a land of strangers is a land of wolves. Like that, that's the book that comes out on September 17th. And then I'm working on the next Walt book that's, you know, for, you know, 2 years from now, which is called The Next to Last Stand. And then I've got a couple of other projects that I'm working on that appear to be, you know, getting a little bit of traction out in Los Angeles. Like that, I've got a feature film that I'm working on. Like that, and then actually a pilot, you know, for a potential other television series like that. So we'll see what happens. You know, keep your fingers crossed.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be definitely keeping tabs on and looking forward to, well, pretty much anything you come up with. So, Craig Johnson, thank you so much for coming on this show. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure. This was a joy.